Welcome to the Speed Trap Podcast. I'm Betsy.
And I'm Sophie. Join us weekly to stay updated on the latest racing news.
And to hear our thoughts and opinions on each topic.
In today's edition of Reverse Gear, we break down team histories.
So let's jump in. I know you wanted to say a couple of things first.
I just thought it would be a nice foundation to this episode if we discuss a current new change to F1 team history that is, well, not history yet, but will be.
So a little bit of the future.
So yeah, speaking of the future before we go into the past, we got the news this week that Porsche and Audi are pretty much signed on, total confirmation that they're signed on to enter Formula One.
Mm-hmm.
Not so far as being their own constructor, but we have heard whispers of which teams they might be looking at working with, right? So Red Bull have long been linked with Porsche at this point, so we think that's probably a done deal. And Audi, it seems to be. We're not 100% certain. We, as in me and all the other experts, no. But
yes.
It seems that it's probably going to be McLaren by the looks of how things are working out. And a lot of this has come about because of regulation changes for the 2026 tech regulation changes. So it's going to be much easier to enter as an engine manufacturer, for example, which we think is what's going to happen with Porsche and probably also Audi. Because the engines are getting easier, because I believe we talked about this, right? They're getting rid of the MGUK or the MGUH, one of them.
Yeah.
So it becomes so much cheaper to make a Formula One engine. So this is how it's going to welcome in these teams.
Absolutely. And this isn't the first time we've seen constructors sort of sneaking in by being part of the, you know, the engine
the,
and things
the power
like
unit
that.
Provider. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's not at all unusual, which I have a little bit of history to talk about, but we'll get to that later.
We both do.
Yeah.
So just to set up what we're going to be doing, we have both taken five teams, which I've made a random team generator, and we each took the five teams we were given. And we're going to go through the sort of timeline of where each team began as what team they began as, if they aren't the team they currently are, and how they ended up where they are today. Because we thought that would be a fun thing to look at, considering there's a lot of history in like teams being bought out by other teams, or, you know, financial disasters happening, etc., etc., which we will go into a little bit of detail about. But some teams, as Betsy's probably about to talk about, I think we were going to start with Ferrari. Some teams, like Ferrari, have been the same team throughout their entire existence in the sport. And I think that's pretty significant, especially looking at Ferrari and Alfa, which I think you want to start with. So,
I think so. I think it makes the most sense historically.
Sure.
Because Ferrari is the original, right? They are the one that everyone knows about. And I'll trace back to one fellow named Enzo Ferrari, which we all know off the top of our heads pretty well.
Of course.
So the first like official season of Formula One was in 1950, right? We all kind of know that. But there were Grand Prix that were not official F1 Grand Prix historically through the 20s and 30s. And Ferrari took part in those in a non-Ferrari sense. They were more attached to Alfa Romeo. And this is where it kind of gets complicated and why I want to go to Alfa Romeo next, if we may.
Yeah, of course.
Because of how intertwined that they were, is that Alfa Romeo was really the one racing, and Ferrari was more on the road car side, not card. And so that was their beginning, was really holding hands together. And
cute.
It was cute. And their separation wasn't until many years later. And so honestly, like, Alfa Romeo is low-key very successful historically in a way that I feel like a lot of people don't know or acknowledge. It's like, oh, Ferrari is the one. But in a lot of ways, Alfa Romeo is the reason that Ferrari is the team
I feel like they get dismissed a lot simply because now they're not even a factory team. They're just a title sponsor for another team, Sauber, which you're going to talk about. Sorry to spoil that for everybody.
It's okay.
But I think
big spoiler.
But I think that goes into like a lot of why, you know, Ferrari gets celebrated so historically these days, but Alfa Romeo doesn't as much.
Well, I think Ferrari was very specific about their racing, which was Formula One and Grand Prix types, very single seater focused, where Alfa Romeo was kind of in all the different racing motorsport spaces. And so basically the story goes, to simplify it in a little bit of a nutshell, Alfa Romeo had been doing this since like the 1920s, existing in this space, and Enzo Ferrari was kind of with them, you know, doing his thing, learning things like that, and then all of a sudden he was like, I want to do this by myself. And I'm going to name it after myself. And so he did that. And he was like, let's do it. And so...
And by doing that...
Founded Ferrari.
He sort of set the precedent for other people to found teams and name them after themselves in a way, right?
Yes, they did.
Rather than just having, like, a car manufacturer, right? Even though Ferrari is now and has been a road car manufacturer. Like, so, for example, like, the Williams team, that's a huge name. That was named after the founder, among others, like Jordan as well, which I'm going to talk about as part of another team. You know, Stewart, which is also another historical team after Jackie Stewart. So, like, there's a ton of teams like that. And I feel like Enzo Ferrari sort of was, like, the OG, like, the dawn of, like, Formula One, you know?
Right.
So,
anyways, we'll fast forward slightly, but keep in mind that Ferrari didn't really get into racing on its own until F1 kind of officially started. The Alfa Romeo was still helping them with their engines and all the parts and the chassis and everything that they needed. And so if what's interesting and what I didn't know is like kind of what I mentioned earlier is that Alfa Romeo is kind of the founder of the Ferrari team. So
they're the daddy.
They kind of are.
They're the alpha.
This was also like a statistic I want to bring up because Ferrari is still to this day the most
decorated
successful team in Formula One, which A, yes, is due in a large sense to them being around for 72 years. But this is what I wanted to specifically point out. Here's another fun fact, which we all know because remember one day when Ferrari had their 1000th race anniversary and we saw very weird things?
I'll never forget. The dancing pit crew, that's my favorite thing ever,
the most incredible thing. So races entered, Ferrari has raced, well, I guess they only had 1,034 starts, but as far as like total races entered, it's 1,036, which is incredible.
Wow.
That is a lot.
That's a lot
of races. It is.
A lot. A very large amount.
Quite a very large amount. And this is the statistic that's particularly interesting. Actually, I want to see if you can guess.
Oh, gosh.
Do you mind?
Yeah.
How many race victories do you think Ferrari has
out of 1,036?
Yeah,
I feel like they have to.
And keep in mind, they have won 16 championship titles.
God. Okay. Well, I don't know if it's like will it be 50% of? It won't be. They won't have won 500, will they? Potentially. I don't want to like say too big and then ruin the moment for you. I'll say they've won like 368.
Okay, very specific. They have won 240.
That's still a very significant event. That's like one in every four races, almost.
Okay. How many wins does Lewis Hamilton have?
Over 100 at this point.
Exactly. He basically has half of all the victories that Ferrari has had in the last 70 years.
Oh. Don't rub it in their faces. They're going to rub it in his face this year when they win the Constructors' title.
I mean, yeah. But I thought it was an interesting perspective.
No, yeah. Because
that's wild.
I agree. And I mean, Michael Schumacher probably won a majority of them. He has something like 93 race wins, but that also includes like Benetton as well from when he was there. But he probably has a good 80 of those race wins at least.
Yeah. Michael Schumacher, though, bringing him up, is Ferrari's most successful driver as well.
And then Sebastian Vettel. Yes. My boy. Yeah. But then Kimi's their last world champion, right?
Yeah.
From 2007.
Yeah. And
tough one for Lewis that year. Yes. A 1 point loss.
We love it though.
They were really
like, it's fun. I mean, it's bad, but it's fun.
They were preemptively rubbing it in his face, you know.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
But very cool.
It is cool. I think I feel like that's all I want to cover right now. I decided not to cover the whole Ferrari McLaren scandal because I feel like that will take an entire episode in itself.
We could do like a whole series on Formula One scandals. I have one scandal that I'm going to briefly mention.
Okay.
That I'm not going to go into too much detail, but
yeah,
I will. It's Crashgate, just to preempt that. We love Crashgate. We should talk about all of these things. They're really great.
We should.
But
all right, but do you have any questions I have?
Have you got anything to say about present day Ferrari that could add to this?
Not too much, honestly. Things have really stayed quite the same for Ferrari.
Talk about 2019. I thought you might bring that up. I was waiting for the 2019.
I think that should go on our scandals episode.
That should. We talk about it too much on this podcast anyway.
Yeah, we already know. Yeah. I mean, Ferrari, like, honestly, it's quite simple. They've been around for 72 years.
They know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing.
They'll probably be around for another 70 years.
Yeah.
Unless the electric vehicle revolution kills them, you know? Because when you know, they're kind of all about petrol head. Yeah. You know. But I mean, Ferrari always will be one of the most iconic brands, not just inside of Formula One, but outside as well. So props to them for creating that. And I'm sure the Formula One team was a huge part in sealing the deal on being so amazing.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, they were successful early on, but
yes,
and obviously did come to win.
They've had like waves of success, right? It's been very roller coaster for them, and it seems like now they're back on the upswing again. And it just seems like sometimes it depends on the new technical regulations, right? A lot of the time,
I don't know how long it will last.
Yeah,
but
I mean, 2026 might be horrible for them, so they might be riding out this set of tech regs for like a set of back to back championships. So we'll see.
Yeah,
but they do have some good competitors. So do you want to talk about their father, Alpha, while you were here talking about them?
It's a very weird sort of incestual relationship between Ferrari and Alfa Romeo, I have to say.
Formula One is incestual, though.
No, it really is.
Yeah.
Like, quite odd.
To its core.
Yes, indeed. Okay, so Alfa Romeo. A weird story for Alfa Romeo, you know, because they were so... Like it's hard to separate them from Ferrari in the early stages because they really were a team and like didn't separate themselves for years and years and years. And which I thought was kind of cool. And I wish that it in a way was still similar. It's no longer quite like that, but they did. And I didn't know this. They won the first official Formula One Grand Prix in Monaco in 1950, was won by an Alfa Romeo driver.
It was indeed.
Yeah. So, and eventually won the world championship as well.
Yeah. Juan Manuel Fangio, right?
No, he did not win. Oh. It was, oh Lord, what was his name?
Farina.
Farina. Yes. Yeah.
Both Fs.
Yeah. Fangio was close.
Yes.
Very close.
I mean, he ended up winning a lot after anyway, so that can be a forgiven comment that we made. But yeah, Farina. Shout out to him. I feel like he's quite often forgotten in the history of the sport, unless you're like really deep down invested in it, you know?
Yeah. Fangio won the following year, so 1951. Giuseppe Farina was 1950.
Shout out to Farina.
Yeah. Which so we all kind of like don't see that much.
Yeah.
Except Seb knew.
Seb knows everything.
He knows everything.
I mean, Farina sort of sealed his place in history, though, to be the first ever winner.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that absolutely has to feel good. He's probably no longer with us, I have to say, but.
Yeah, he's old. He's old. Dead.
But.
You know.
I'm sure.
In a fine way. No tragedy there.
While he was here, he must have looked back on that and been like, yeah, I'm that guy. Yeah. No one will be that guy because I'm that guy. So shout out to that guy, you know.
100%. So after that, World War II actually kind of had a big impact.
Mm-hmm.
Not for all of the teams, but for Alfa Romeo, it was kind of one of the switches in sort of the momentum that they had as a team. Mm. It didn't quite affect Ferrari as much. Obviously, I think it affected all teams across the board. It kind of affected everything everywhere across the board.
Of course, yeah.
But I think Ferrari just wasn't that well established as like a racing team at that point. So obviously, it was going to hit Alfa Romeo harder.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it really had dominated the early post-World War II era, though. And then after that, it started to slip down. They started, well, I guess it's hard to say because these were not the official Grand Prix, right? So take what you will with these grains of salt, I guess.
Slightly different rules. Yeah.
Right. Like, they dominated from 1946 to 1949. So it was, like, right before, and then they did really well in 1951.
They were the target to beat when the official rules came in. Like, they were they were the place set for everybody else to get to, you know, the benchmark. Right.
Which is weird when you think about, like, the evolution of them as they peaked in the beginning, and then they...
All downhill
the
rest from of their there, baby.
Career was actually like rolling downhill, which was kind of sad for them. But not it's
even,
also really
not even like going fast in the hill, rolling down the hill,
rolling down the hill, rolling. Down the hill.
Oh no!
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, like low key, they're one of the founders of Formula One.
Yeah, respect.
So really, really, way more, I guess, than I thought that how, like, I don't know. I mean, I kind of was like, yeah, Alfa Romeos have been around for so long. Like, they're a classic car company. Like, I know them. Everybody knows them, just, like, off the top of your head. But I had no idea that they had spent so much time being part of the growth and the start of the sport.
Mm.
So I feel really bad now that they're doing so badly that it's like, this is an OG team.
Well, blame Sauber.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and like, no, they don't make their own engines anymore.
No.
Like, Ferrari took that over. So Ferrari just like low key squashed him. Enzo Ferrari was like, okay, bye. I'm like, leaving now and I'm going to squash you and it's all good. Like,
as he does. That's just his like MO, I feel like.
Yeah, it is a bit.
He's a bit of a bossy boots. But that's what like gets him places. So,
yeah.
Gotta do it.
Yeah.
All right.
It's so hard. Like, my head is, like, getting, like, I want to jump from, like, this team to this team that we're, like, both doing this at the same time. Like,
well, you can go through all of yours first if you want to.
No, I don't want to. I want you to get a chance. But, like, I'm also, like, confusing, like, Ferrari, Mercedes, and
Mercedes
Alfa
have a huge
right
history
now,
as
and,
well.
Like,
well, I can...
It's all just so...
You want me to hit up... I've got a couple of historical teams here. I could hit up Aston Martin. I could hit up Williams. You want to decide which one?
Start with, like, your earliest team,
okay.
I'm going to say. Because I think I'm going to... I don't know what I'm going to do next.
Well, technically, Aston Martin were racing first. before Williams. Aston Martin, everyone knows the name, Aston Martin.
Yes, they do.
Founded by Lionel Martin and Robert Bamford. Great name, Bamford.
Bamford.
They started competing in racing in the 20s, so they're like really, really far back as a car manufacturer in motorsport. Obviously, in the 20s, it wasn't really like Formula One. So if you've ever seen like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, it's more of that, that kind of style of racing, you know, with the crankshaft cars, you know? So they were competing all the way through. In their first F1 race, that wasn't even like an F1 World Championship race, I believe. It was just a single-seater Formula One car race under F1 sanctioned rules, but not part of the World Championship, was the 1959 British Racing Drivers Club International Trophy event at Silverstone, where they finished first. Or sorry, they finished second. They finished second. Jack Brabham finished first, and I'm sure Brabham's a name that's going to get brought up at some point in this episode. For one of your teams, I think.
Who?
Jack Brabham.
Bravo?
Brabham.
Oh, Brabham. I thought you said Bravo. I was like, I don't think I've heard of him before. But
no, Jack Brabham. But then they withdrew from single-seater sport in the 60s. So they took a long break. And so the roots of the current Aston Martin Formula One team are in the 90s. So in 1991, Eddie Jordan, who is now an infamous name in Formula One, who's a rich guy who like liked racing on the side. He was so like, rich guy. Hey. You know, which is a lot of the time what happens in Formula One. You got a rich guy who's like wanted to be a racing driver and then wasn't quite good enough, but was rich. So decided to start his own team and fund other drivers, which works out a lot of the time. And it worked out for Eddie Jordan. So
he did. Well, it's interesting because you can't really do that in the same way now.
No, right. Unless you're like Lawrence Stroll billionaire level, which we'll get into.
But still, there's like, there's buyouts, but there's no.
Well, Gene Haas was an example of somebody that came into the sport like that. True. But he already had his own team in another motorsport category, but he did start that as grassroots anyway. So you could say Gene Haas is a more modern example of doing that, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, so Jordan Grand Prix started in 91, and their outfit was based in Silverstone, which to this day, the factory is still in Silverstone, which I think is a really cool place to have your factory. Great historical location.
So for sure.
And they initially were running in like the lower formulas before Formula One, before the team was established. They were running in F3, and famously had a huge battle between Ayrton Senna and Martin Brundle for the British F3 title with the Jordan team, which Ayrton won. Obviously, I mean, I was going to say obviously, but I don't want to insult Martin Brundle because he's obviously a great racer.
Yes.
And another famous name, Johnny Herbert, won them their first race in F3000, which is modern F3.
Nice.
And they also competed with drivers like John Alesi in the junior formulas. So they then were like, we'll step up to Formula One. Why not? So in 1991... they did. And their first engine provider was Ford, which Ford's American. Very like American. Historical name in the car world, right? I mean, Ford invented the car. So they finished P5 in the constructors that year, which for your rookie year as a team, not terrible, right? So what was funny about that season though was that one of their drivers, Bertrand Gachot, he failed to finish the season because he was jailed for attacking a taxi driver, and who replaced him but Michael Schumacher in his rookie season. And because he was a Mercedes driver, Mercedes gave the Jordan team like €150,000. We're like, keep him. But then immediately he left the team the next race and went to Benetton. So I thought that was funny.
That was funny.
So like, there you go.
Bye.
So that was their
Felicia.
Part of their first season. And they sort of like, they peaked a little bit and then they like dropped off for their second season, and their third season wasn't so good. And their fourth season was 1994, which is an infamous season for many reasons, right?
Yeah.
But that's where they started to like pick up a little bit. And at that point, one of the drivers was Rubens Barrichello, which he was part of the insane San Marino Grand Prix weekend where he got horribly injured. But anyway, so they had a few not to get too much into detail with that, because we could talk about that forever. And we have talked about it on other episodes.
Yeah.
Including in the Senna documentary we did. But yeah, so they sort of averaged out. They finished P5 in the constructors, so like back to back to back to back to back to back, after changing like multiple engine providers, including Mugen Honda, which then switched to just Honda. And they had drivers like Damon Hill, who brought them their first win in 1998, 7 years after they entered, which must have been like such a relief.
Yeah.
And then that brought them to finish fourth, which I think was their highest finish in the constructors. The next year they finished P3. So that was their highest finish in the constructors. But then in 2003, this is where the downfall of the team really came for Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
So Eddie Jordan brought a lawsuit against Vodafone because he claimed that they made a verbal contract agreement to sponsor the team for 3 years, but then they went off and sponsored Ferrari instead of Jordan. And so Classic. He was like, What? And then so he like tried to sue them, and then like 2 months later he withdrew it, and then he ended up having to pay for a Vodafone's legal fees as well. And so from that, the team never really financially recovered. So he basically screwed his team up by trying to sue somebody that was going to sponsor them then didn't, to put it shortly. So in 2004, they had their worst season. And so in 2005, they sold the team to the Midland Group, which is sort of like a consortium. For $60 million, which doesn't seem like a lot compared to what normal or modern Formula One teams sell for now. But they ran the team as Jordan for one final season, even though Midland had bought them out. But then the next season, they were renamed to Midland F1 Racing and were registered as the first Russian Formula One team, which, there you go. Very interesting.
Never would happen these days.
Well, I'm going to talk about that when I get to Haas. But there you go.
Truly.
And so their team principal was Trevor Carlin of Carlin Motorsport fame, who has nurtured many a driver from that are on the grid currently, including Daniel Ricciardo, Carlos Sainz, Yuki Tsunoda, Max Verstappen.
Yeah.
So he's pretty much a legend. So he was part of that. And they were only that team for a year. Or, well, 2 years, but really kind of just a year. But they, like, started climbing the grid, and then the team was bought out by Spyker, which, very cool name.
Spyker.
Which is a Dutch car manufacturer, Spyker.
Mm-hmm.
And they changed the livery to Dutch orange, obviously, because they had to.
Of course.
And they became the second ever Dutch entry into Formula One. So this team has had a few nationalities. And then they started, you know, improving. They got Ferrari engines, but they only scored 1 point that year in Japan. And then they sold the team to the infamous Vijay Malaya for the 2008 season, which is where Force India kicks in. Now, this is where a lot of you people that are similar in age to us will probably sort of remember the team being at when you first sort of got into Formula One. So it was Force India, and then it was Sahara Force India. And they had their first points with Giancarlo Fisichella in Spa. Spa is a strong race for this team. So, so they got their first points there. And so they were pretty good for, they were averaging out, you know, middling. And then 2018 happened. And what happened in 2018? Vijay Malaya was accused of fraud and defaulting on loans.
Yes.
And so he could not afford to continue running the team. And so ahead of the Hungarian GP that year, the team announced they were put into administration. So this team has a history of financial woes. And
a lot of up and down for
and this is
that team.
This is where Racing Point comes in, which was the name of the consortium led by Lauren Stroll, who gets like the supervillain treatment a lot of the time. But he saved this team from administration. Yeah. And so they changed the name to Racing Point Force India. And it was like a huge like issue with the name. And but because of their issue, the entry of Jordan. So you get like a racing license as a constructor when you enter the sport, and it carries with each team unless they want to re-enter us completely. So the Jordan team had carried on all the way from 91 and ended when Lauren Stroll bought the team. So that was a kind of a sad thing. So basically what happened was they were trying to buy the team, but they needed approval from Indian Bank, so they couldn't end up buying the team. So they instead bought the assets of the team instead. And so that's why they had to re-register as like a new license, because they didn't actually buy the team, which is a weird clause.
That's weird.
Yeah.
That is,
Yeah, poor Jordan. That's where their history sort of ends. But then Force India completely got taken out of the title, obviously, and it became just Racing Point for the 2019 and 2020 seasons, where they had their best result. Lance finished P4 in the German Grand Prix, which the 2019 German Grand Prix, infamous. Go watch that for Lewis Hamilton's pit stop alone, which was crazy. And then 2020 brought on the pink Mercedes controversy, right?
Yeah.
Where they were accused of copying the 2019 Mercedes car, which was so good. And it was actually Renault. Shout out to Cyril Abitbol, who we'll talk about in a bit, who protested their car. And obviously they got found guilty and they lost 15 constructors' points. And in doing that, they might have finished higher than the constructors. Obviously they might have, but they might have finished a position higher. 15 points is a lot in like the midfield sort of range of cars, so it could have been a big deal for them. But the drivers got to keep their points. And then after 2020, basically they just changed to Aston Martin because Lawrence Stroll invested in Aston Martin and was like, hey, let's rebrand the team for a fresh start. And so let's bring in this British classical car company that used to be a huge name in motorsport in the olden days. And so they're back. And so far, it has done nothing good for them. So I will not mention much of their present day. But they have taken on Sebastian Vettel. So good. I'm happy for them. But they did some bad stuff to Sergio Perez as well. But I don't want to like diss them too much. But because he ended up in a good place after that. But really, that was as short as I could be with Aston Martin. Because there was a lot. But the other teams I have are shorter, but that one was Aston Martin was like 100 teams, so that's where I ended up condensing it into. But yeah, so there you go. Aston Martin.
Aston Martin.
Big one.
All right. Let me do McLaren because it's a lot. It's a mouthful.
Go ahead.
It has similar vibes to Aston Martin, except it doesn't change teams, it changes engines like every couple of years. I'm like, oh my god. So McLaren is actually the second oldest Formula One team that has not changed through many, many hands. It's been McLaren, stayed McLaren, succeeded and failed as McLaren.
Also named after the founder, right?
Bruce McLaren.
There you go.
Yep.
Parallels.
Bruce McLaren was actually one of the drivers when the team made the debut in 1966.
Mm. He's from New Zealand, right?
I actually don't know.
I believe he is, because I think the original McLaren logo was a Kiwi bird.
That's cute.
So I'll look that up just to confirm for you.
Yeah, look at that.
While you're talking.
While I talk more. Yeah, oh, you're right. He is a Kiwi bird.
He is from New Zealand.
I literally remember looking at that, and I was like, weird little logo.
But there you go.
Yes, facts.
Fun fact.
Yeah. Little Kiwi logo. They should still have that, in my opinion, honestly.
They might.
I would like
for
that.
Like a historical race, adopt it back.
Yeah. Mm. Pretty cool. Mm. Anyway, so Bruce McLaren was one of the original drivers, and which was cool. I feel like we don't really see that many Formula One founders actually drive the car.
True.
But he died.
Yeah, in a race.
I don't know why I'm laughing.
Gallows humor.
He did die in a crash, which was very unfortunate for the team.
And they went through some, though, if you want to look at it in a positive light.
It's true. Yeah, it's true. Actually, like, McLaren had a lot of death.
Yeah.
There was, like, a lot of death, especially in the early days, not lately, but early days. But, I mean, in all fairness, like, everybody was dying in the early days because it was so unsafe.
Mm.
So it was not unusual for...
Including spectators as well.
Oh, God. I'm going to get to that.
Okay. Sorry.
No, I don't know if that's the incident you're going to talk about.
No. Go. You talk about it.
It might be, because I know that there were a couple. But anyways, so I feel like, and this is something that's very kind of unique and cool about McLaren, is that there have been so many world champions who have raced for McLaren.
Yeah.
Not necessarily won with them, mm-hmm. but raced for them, right?
Yeah.
We have Ayrton Senna.
Mm-hmm.
We have Prost.
Mm-hmm.
We have Fernando Alonso.
Yep.
We have Lewis Hamilton,
yep.
who did win with them.
Jenson Button.
Kimi Raikkonen.
Mm-hmm.
The list goes on and on, which is actually really cool. Mika Häkkinen. That's what I said.
Yeah. it's a fun name. I love that name.
It's a good name.
It's a very good name. The year we were born, he won the world championship.
Yes, it was. So it was, you know, a tense time. And we talked about this in our Senna documentary as well. But the post-Senna days for McLaren were a wild time. They did not like each other. They pretty much hated each other. And there was a lot of issues as far as how they both drove against each other and caused multiple crashes, which we all know this. This is not any surprise. Which eventually led Senna to leave and go to Williams.
Right.
But really the only reason that Prost came back was because Renault fired him.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
So it was like he was mad about that in general.
Yeah.
Which was iconic.
It's funny that Prost ended up going to Williams.
Yeah.
And winning his last championship at Williams.
You're right. Kind of followed each other.
Mansell like, hated like that. But there you go.
Yeah.
I'll talk about that in a minute.
It's okay. So now it gets into the engines. And we're in the 80s now.
Love the 80s.
Fast forward a little bit.
I love 80s music. It's a good time.
Class. Yes. So during the 80s, Techniques d'Avant-Garde. Wasn't too bad. Okay.
great.
Was funding the Porsche build.
Yeah.
And they stole that from Williams. So when I say that it's sort of an ancestral sport, I mean this very frankly. It is. Which is interesting now, right, that we have Porsche kind of coming back.
Yeah.
But guess who else was in the engine mix with them? Honda. Of course.
Of course it was everywhere.
Honda. They are absolutely everywhere.
We love Honda.
And at this point, also, Niki Lauda had come out of retirement to race for McLaren again.
He had to do it. You know?
He had to. So, of course, we had Niki Lauda to race for McLaren.
Another
also
world champion.
You had to have it. You absolutely had to have it.
If Niki Lauda's coming back and you refuse him a seat, who even are you?
Yeah. I know. So, during this time, and this is something to keep our eye out for, like you said, that it's very possible/probable that Porsche goes to McLaren, right? Pairs up with them.
I get what you're saying. Audi with McLaren.
Audi with McLaren. Okay.
But use that segue anyway.
My thoughts on this. Well, just historically, when in the 80s, which also I think in a large part is due to having Senna and Prost as your drivers, they absolutely dominated the field with that Porsche engine.
Mm.
So that's why, like, I would not be surprised if they partnered up again.
Been cool,
is like,
for sure. That would
just historically,
cool
I get it.
Well, it's like their similar move, right? It was when they were McLaren Mercedes, that's when Lewis won the championship, right? So
yeah.
Their idea now to go back to Mercedes was probably to reclaim that old victory sense. So I think what you're saying makes sense. Like, maybe they are tricking us and they're not going to Red Bull and they are going to McLaren. You never know.
Yeah. Okay. Fast forward a few years. Mm-hmm. 1988. Honda decides to provide power.
Yes. Not good.
And everyone is like, why? Like, we were doing good. Like, what's the point? And yeah. McLaren was like, we just wanted to change it up because we are just taking everything from everyone and this is just
they were like now. We feel bad.
Yes. But actually the reason why that was is that Prost it was encouraged by Prost and then Ayrton Senna came over and so it was like I don't know what Prost is doing, he's always doing something, you know,
sticking
he's
always up there doing something.
He did. And I don't want to get into, like, the very specific technical regulations of the engines because I am not going to explain any of that correctly. And so I think that I would be in a large disservice to the sport
yes.
if I tried. But there was a certain type of engine, a turbocharged engine
yeah.
that McLaren was using from Honda that was then banned. And so then, then Honda had to not use that. And that was sort of like a little bit rocky for them, right? This is sort of like Ferrari being like, oh, I can't really use all of my gas anymore. Like, ooh,
right,
what are we
right,
gonna do?
Right.
Anyways, this is the time when things got really intense for both Senna and Prost, and they like fought each other and crashed into each other because it's fun, you know.
Just cause, yeah.
You know, just spend all the money.
That's what they do.
They do. Exactly. Okay. Now we're in 1993 and 1994. At this point, Honda was like, I'm done with this sport. And they wanted to enter IndyCar World Series.
Fair enough.
So, fine. They're like, I'm done with this. Let's go to IndyCar. Start something new. Valid. And at this point, there were some options out here for us, including Ford, like you had mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
We also had Lamborghini. And we had, and I don't know how to pronounce this, Peugeot.
It's French.
E-O-T.
Yes.
Peugeot. Nailed it.
We have a lot of them in Europe.
Yeah. So at that point in 1993, they were trying to figure out who they're going to get. They're like, I need an engine. No, I need a car. I need a driver and an engine. Sorry, I had to.
Cyril.
And at this point, which is also hilarious, that I just did that little bit.
Yep.
their first choice for that was actually Renault to supply them with engines. I feel like McLaren is on this vicious cycle
with Renault.
With Renault and engines in general.
Yeah.
Like Mercedes,
I agree.
Renault, Honda. Like
Renault's
it's just what's gonna
cycle
come back next.
With a lot of teams on the grid.
Drivers, yeah. Like
and drivers.
Yeah, no, a lot of drivers too.
Yeah.
It's a wild time.
Yeah.
So anyways, that fell through.
Of course.
And at that point, they decided to go with Ford.
Nice. Classic.
Which was fine.
Is it Cosworth or just Ford? Ford Cosworth or just Ford?
Just Ford.
Okay.
At this point. Because it was just Ford.
Sometimes they pair up. Just sometimes.
No, it was just Ford at this point.
Got it.
You know, of course that didn't last long.
No.
Of course.
McLaren loves to be fickle.
I really do. So, eventually, a year later, McLaren decided to test a Lamborghini engine. And it was as part of that deal with the Lamborghini owner, which was owned at that point by Chrysler.
Oh.
I know, this is like
weird.
A weird like family tree that like it's hard to grasp
yeah.
totally. Right? It's very confusing. They didn't like it.
Of course.
And so they decided to go with
Peugeot.
Mm-hmm. Peugeot. And
another French.
It was not good for them.
French engine suppliers and McLaren, historically not a good pairing.
True.
Oh, dear.
So they did not, they won a couple of, they got a couple of podiums, but didn't have any wins, which was not a great look for them, who, when they had the Porsche engine, were dominating.
Maybe they are bringing that back. But I don't know if they want to lose the Mercedes
team. an idea. Okay, well then we can get into Mercedes.
Whisper into Zach Brown's ear.
Porsche.
Right. Okay, so now at this point, right, we have a new engine. It's a bad engine. We don't like it. Had a lot of engine failures, ton of unreliability. It cost McLaren ton of money, as it does. And they finally switched to a Mercedes-Benz.
That's branded. Right, baby.
And I'm going to mispronounce this. Of course I will. Ilmor. But I think it's British, so I'm probably fine. Ilmor?
Spell it.
I-L-M-O-R.
Ilmor, yeah.
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 Ilmor designed the engine, though. So Mercedes did not. It was just branded as Mercedes.
Got it.
All right.
Part of the Mercedes family.
Right.
Right, right, right.
So now we're with Mercedes a little bit, and it's 1995 now. God.
We're chugging along here.
Chugging along. It's only been like 5 years. So now in 1996, right, like Williams is taking over that era, you know.
Taking over the world.
McLaren is on the struggle bus and they're trying to find an engine and it's just not really working well.
They were for a long time on the struggle bus.
Yes. Yep. And right now, like, they have, like, yeah, they have
peaks and valleys.
A lot of struggles. Okay, so let's jump ahead a little bit to 2003, which started, here we are on an upswing again, right? At this point, we have David Coulthard and Kimi Räikkönen, which I think I often forget
that they were
was
teammates
ever at McLaren.
Oh, Kimi?
Oh, no, just in general at McLaren. Yeah. You know what I mean?
No, that's funny, too, because, like, Kimi at McLaren was one of his most successful years in Formula One.
Yes.
So, and a lot of people are just like, no. Ferrari boy. He's a Ferrari boy. Or a Lotus boy.
I mean,
boy.
He long time. Like, he, like, low key is, though. He's a Ferrari boy.
He is
boy.
A Ferrari boy. I mean, he'll always be a Ferrari boy as their world champion, so.
It is. They started on, like, a promising note, though, but then things took a rough turn for them that season. And while they didn't completely have absolute failure, they had a lot of issues as far as engines, again, of course. Why not? And so for, like, their most successful season that they had had in a while was in 2005. And that was when Juan Pablo Montoya showed up there. So, of course, right. He did. We had to have him as well.
Of course.
Of course. Okay. So, Lewis Hamilton shows up at McLaren in 2007.
Yeah.
And we're like, yay.
And he, like, absolutely shocks everybody to pieces with his rookie performance.
That he does. So at this point, 2010, a couple years later,
after in 2010 Lewis season, won his championship.
After Lewis won his championship, McLaren is no longer a Mercedes works team.
Right.
So now they actually kind of are a real engine manufacturer and not just branding themselves, as I understand it. Because at that point before, it was still whatever I said. I'm man, whatever. I'm in. That were
yep.
like making the engines, but Mercedes was just like
branding them, saying
this is ours. So that kind of relationship was ending. And I guess this is where it gets so complicated, because now Mercedes steps in and, like, now we're all together and holding hands and becoming very incestuous again.
Mm-hmm.
So while Mercedes is in the midst of kind of entering Formula One and starting to take it over, right?
Yeah.
They're
putting it lightly
on their rise. Yes. So they're starting that. They're still supplying engines to McLaren. So that's okay. It's still happening. Things are changing as far as Mercedes, but the relationship, it's still fine.
Yeah.
Nothing too crazy to worry about. But then, of course, McLaren started doing badly again, right? They were outpaced by this new team, Red Bull, well, relatively new team at this point. which yeah, you will talk about.
A baby team.
A little baby team. And suddenly there's this new Mercedes team and there's Red Bull and McLaren is like getting left out. And they're like, this is terrible. This is terrible. This is really not good news. And then Lewis leaves, not long after that.
None other than Mercedes, which must have hurt.
I feel like McLaren is like very insecure right now. And they're just like very vulnerable.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Sergio Perez,
who also drove for McLaren briefly,
shows up McLaren.
Yeah.
And we're all like,
which ended badly, actually.
Yes. And then Kevin Magnussen.
Also. Yep.
Also drove for McLaren. Like, I don't think there's anyone who
hasn't driven for McLaren.
For McLaren. Like, that's what it feels like.
Yeah. That's true.
So anyways, in 2015, McLaren decides to end their relationship with Mercedes, and that they decide to go to Honda. Exactly.
Yep.
Didn't go well. It did not go well, even though
it's historically a bad move for them to go to Honda.
Yes. It's just this was not a great call. But that's okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay. They had their worst performance since 1980. It's all okay. No worries.
This doesn't hurt at all. Especially for Fernando, right?
Exactly. So anyways, fast forward. They sign with Renault. Things improve a little bit.
Oh, Cyril.
Yes, they're doing better. Things seem to be better. Like, it's not the best ever, but they're doing pretty well.
They're top of the midfield.
And now we're up to date, right? And then they decide, let's go back to Mercedes.
Hey-o, because look at that power unit. That was doing
Mercedes
great.
Mercedes is doing well. But
now, maybe that could have been a mistake for them.
What just bothers me the most is that I feel like every, 5 years or less, they decide to get a new engine, and a lot of
screw
it seemed
themselves.
For no reason. Like, why would you get rid of Porsche? Like, you were doing really well.
Yeah. Well, I think the Renault move was kind of an obvious move most currently to get away from Renault.
Well, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I know what
but
you
I just
mean
historically, I'm like, you guys are the most unstable
people. They just get bored,
people.
You know? They're like, hey, let's try something new.
Let's
be the fun team that changes things up, you know?
Oof. Anyway, that's McLaren.
That was like the longest one yet, I think. But interesting.
Sorry.
No, it's interesting.
But like they had so many different engines, and I thought it was important to.
No, I agree. Another team that I want to talk about that also had a lot of engines, Williams, which was my next oldest team. Williams, as it's still known today, was founded by Frank Williams, Sir Frank Williams, and his partner Patrick Head, who was the tech genius behind a lot of it. So it was started as it is today after Frank's previous racing outfit, Frank Williams Racing Cars, failed despite getting bought out by a Canadian millionaire called Walter Wolf, who sounds like an absolute supervillain from a comic book.
Yes, it does.
And the team was rebranded to Wolf Williams Racing, and then it was just Wolf Racing, and they took the Williams out, and that really like hurt the Williams family, and so Frank was like, screw you, and started another racing team in 1977, which is the Williams team as we know it today. So yeah, we did a whole documentary about we did not make the documentary, we did a whole episode where we watched the documentary on the Williams family, just called Williams, and talked about it. Very good
it's
documentary. One of the better ones that we watched, up there with Mosley, I think, in terms of its content and style. So if you're interested, guys, look out for that. And also, what is it with rich Canadian men and buying Formula One teams? Because this is a very common pattern I've noticed looking into the history of teams.
I don't know.
Because it just seems like there's always a Canadian millionaire or billionaire out there just waiting in the wings to buy a Formula One team.
Just chilling out there.
Because that also happened with Renault, I think, back in the day, which from what I remember, I'm going to talk about. But anyway, we're talking about Williams. So Williams, 1977, they entered Formula One, and they took their first win 2 years later. It was a couple of years of struggle before they got into like the pace of things, and they won with Claire Regazzoni, very famous name, at Silverstone, which, great for them, a home race victory is their first victory, mm-hmm. so that must have been very nice. And then 1980, the year after, was when they took their first of many constructors' titles and first of many drivers' titles with Alan Jones, a great driver.
Mm-hmm.
And then the year after that, in 1982, 2 years after, Keke Rosberg won his driver's title with the team. So Williams has a very strong history of providing driver's titles for drivers. So Keke Rosberg, father of Nico Rosberg, if that wasn't an obvious link, are related. He won his championship with Williams. And then years later, Nico went and drove for Williams as well. So there you go. Incestuous as it gets in Formula One.
It really is.
And so they were driving, I believe, at first with Ford engines. And then they switched to Honda, which took...
Of course they did.
Which took them to next level. It was a good move for them, though, because they were driving with Nigel Mansell and Nelson Piquet, who won back-to-back Constructors' Championships in 86 and 87, and Nelson took the 87 driver's title, much to Mansell's dismay. But then, like McLaren, they have a history of doing this. They switched to Renault engines, and it dropped them all the way down the grid. So maybe they're like the opposite to McLaren, where... when they go to Honda, it got good for them. But then when they went to Renault, it got bad for them, you know?
Yeah.
So that was a whole thing, you know? Williams has a very, you know, varied, like, strength. That was a poorly worded sentence. But they have a roller coaster of a time in Formula One.
Yeah.
And so 1994, like you mentioned, Senna joined the team. But it was an unfortunate tragedy that ended that relationship in the San Marino Grand Prix, which mm-hmm. is the very famous Grand Prix. I'm sure you guys know what I'm talking about without going into detail. And so that year was the year that Michael Schumacher won his first driver's championship, I believe, with Benetton. So Williams lost out there because they did have a relatively competitive car. It just... technical issues is what really brought upon, you know, a dark cloud on their team that year.
Yeah.
So anyway, a couple years later, Damon Hill wins the driver's title with them, 96, which mm-hmm. is like his brand for everything. Like his Twitter at is Damon, or it's like 96 F1 World Champ or something. Like he will not go over it. But fair enough, you put your whole life into something. It's in the family. Another incestuous thing, his father, Graham Hill, F1 World Champion. And then Jacques Villeneuve took the 97 title, another famous relation in the F1 mm-hmm. world. But then they lost the Renault power unit, you know?
Yeah.
And it brought in BMW, which Williams BMW is quite, like, you might recognize that as more of a partnership of the modern time. Like, a lot of you guys listening, if you're of our age, Williams BMW is a more known about partnership to our age group. Mm-hmm. And it gave them race wins, right? But it didn't give them titles. So it was like, ooh. So then Renault returned as an engine supplier to mm-hmm. them in 2012. And they won the Spanish GP, which is a very famous moment for that team, actually. Because it's Pastor Maldonado that won it, and he's known for just not being very successful. So that was a very iconic moment.
Mm-hmm.
But then Renault left them the next year. So like, you're seeing, like McLaren, Williams have similar engine issues, right? And that's when Williams became a Mercedes customer team, and still are to this day,
mm-hmm.
which has been like one of the longest constant providers of engines they've had in a while, and it hasn't really seemed to have done them any good, not gonna lie. Apart from the year that they switched to Mercedes when they finished P3 in the constructors, like that was their last glory that they ever had so far. We're not gonna discount them yet, but that's when they had Valtteri and Felipe Massa as their drivers, who both took two podiums each, which was nice. And then mm-hmm. Valtteri left to go to Mercedes, and Felipe retired, so they lost them as well. And they sort of declined from 2016 onwards when they finished last in 2018, which was like the lowest point ever for them, which was rough.
Yeah.
And then they repeated that finishing position in 2019, which must have been twice as rough to like still not improve from last place, which we experienced watching these seasons. So, and it was horrible.
Yeah.
Like 2019 especially, where like their car arrived so late to testing that they missed out on days of running. And so they had to fire their technical director, right? Who I won't even say his name. But they got George in 2019.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a good move for them. Good move on Toto's part, who actually was an investor in Williams at this point. So
Toto's invested in a lot of
Toto used to things. Hover around the Williams garage, you know, he was there, and that's where he met his wife, Susie Wolf, who was a test driver for Williams, which I think very cool. They had a female test driver, one of the first teams to do that.
Probably why he was hanging around.
could be that's why he invested, right? He was like, who's that? No, but 2020 they retained George, which was good for them. Everyone was like, he should go to Mercedes, but they retained him.
And look at him now.
Maybe he wished he stayed at Williams. I don't know. But 2020 also brought Nicholas Latifi, which brought Latifi money from the Latifi consortium.
Right.
Which sort of went down this like path of, oh God, we have no money apart from Latifi money. This is a problem. And so the Williams family decided to sell the team and part from the sport entirely, which was a big, sad day of loss for the Formula One family to see such an iconic group of people leave the sport entirely. But what I thought was sweet is that the consortium, Doralton, I always want to call it Doralton, Doralton Capital, kept the name Williams for the team, which I really appreciate. And I think to rid the team of a name, like, well, it would be like changing Ferrari's name, right?
Yeah.
At this point, or McLaren's name. I think it's very cool. And they keep the butterfly sticker, which was for Ginny Williams. There was always a butterfly on every car to represent her. And they still call the chassis name after Frank as well. So that's very cool.
Yeah.
But 2021, for them so far, if you guys are watching, if you are, has been a very
2022
or sorry if you guys watched 2021 was a very good year for them, considering the past couple of years before that, right? Because we saw them finish P8, so they jumped up two spots in the constructors. George took his first podium and Williams' first podium in years at Spa, which was controversial, but he still did it, so we're counting it. And they scored a double points finish in Hungary, which was a great race. And then Latifi also went on to score in Spa as well, and George also scored at two other times in Monza and Sochi. So they had multiple points finishes in 2021, which, considering that they finished with 1 point in 2019, you know, a lot of things are looking up for them. So we're hoping to do more of that this year, and we're already seeing them score points with Alex Albon as well, who they adopted into their team for 2022, which is the best move ever to make. So I'm so happy that they did that. And there is rumors of perhaps a driver swap occurring halfway through this season, potentially, or looking like Oscar Piastri might step in, probably with Latifi if he crashes another time, probably. But yeah, so that's really the issue, is that they deal with a lot of financial struggles. So for Williams, that's really always been their downfall. And hopefully things are looking up now that they've got a consortium of investors. But
yeah,
that's really the short version of Williams history. But do definitely check out their documentary if you want to see a more detailed version of it, because it is very gripping to watch how things went on. And it's more about the Williams family with the sport on the periphery. But there is a lot about their journey through the sport in there as well. But it's very, very good. So hit that up.
100%.
Thank you for listening to part one. This ended up being quite a long episode, so we decided we wanted to split it into two, since it would end up being an hour each, and it would be 5 and 5. So thank you if you're still here listening. It's been a fun one. Look forward to hearing about the other five teams the next time it's a non-race week. And if you want to reach out to us, we are on social media at SpeedTrapPod on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. And we have an email address if you have a longer inquiry, speedtrappod@gmail.com, if you can't fit it into a DM or into a comment. So yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
And if you'd like to donate, you can head to anchor.fm/speed-trap-pod and hit the donate button. We would really, really appreciate it.